Today's episode of Rob is a Podcast is sponsored by NatureBox. So many times when we're sitting around the house, we're hungry, we're looking for something, and all you end up having is junk food. But you could be making better decisions and start snacking healthy with NatureBox. Don't wait until next year to start getting on the right track with healthier snacks, because NatureBox makes snacks that taste great and are better for you, created with high quality ingredients, free from artificial colors, flavors, or sweeteners, so you could feel great about snacking. Whatever happened to snacks that don't have artificial colors or flavors or sweeteners? They are still here with NatureBox. Get some of my personal favorites. I love the dark cocoa nom noms. I love the pistachio power clusters, even better than trust clusters. And NatureBox has made their service even better. Now you can order as much as you want, as often as you want, without a minimum purchase required, and cancel anytime. Just go to naturebox.com. Check out the whole snack catalog. Over 100 snacks to choose from, and they're constantly adding new snacks. Just pick out the one you want, and they deliver them right to your door. Not by a drone yet at this time, but with NatureBox, you'll never get bored. New snacks every month, inspired by customer feedback, and if you try a snack you like, they will replace it for free. And right now, you could save even more. NatureBox is offering RHAP listeners 50% off your first order. When you go to naturebox.com/RHAP, that's naturebox.com/RHAP, 50% off your first order at naturebox.com/RHAP. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino back here with a special edition of this week's Wiggle Room, because Josh Wiggler is here with me in person. Yes. To do the wiggle dance.
Check it out.
Josh.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Blur.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Make a gif.
Blur.
Wiggle, 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 wiggle.
Yes.
Blur.
Wiggle, wiggle,
yes.
Wiggle, wiggle,
blur.
There really is very little wiggle room.
Oh, so you do that manually.
That's manual.
Okay, so you're just like inserting that into the existing theme song to break my heart and hurt my feelings.
Well, I feel like if there was... Whether Jeff says there's very little wiggle room, or if he said, you guys have a lot of wiggle room.
He's still shouting out the podcast.
Right.
So it's a win. It's just like... Again, like, all press is good press.
Right, right. It's 2016.
Yes.
That's the case. So basically anybody
hashtag
just says your name.
Yeah.
That's what we do.
Yeah, that's good. Rob, how are you?
Very good. Very excited to have you here.
Yes.
Very busy Sunday afternoon. Josh and I are recording the Wiggle Room.
Yeah.
It's going to be, I'm going to go for some food.
Yeah. Where are we going? You're taking me to barbecue?
Yeah. Barbecue place.
Barbecue.
Yep. Hopefully
oh my
it's
God.
Not going to be a rib overload.
Are we going to fly there like Leaf?
Yes.
Will we fly to the barbecue place?
Yes.
What's
yes.
the name of the barbecue restaurant?
You know, I'd rather not out how close
oh.
it is in proximity to my house.
Okay. Also, you don't want a ton of people to like know that that's your spot and then just harass you at the barbecue.
Sure.
Joint. You
want
to keep a secret. Just like a little bit of your personal life to yourself, because you have so little.
Can
of
I
that.
Just have this one
yeah,
thing?
Yeah, you can have the barbecue joint.
Can I have one thing?
Yeah, you can have the barbecue joint. Rob, it's a pleasure to be here in person. We are also, we're recording this live in the Rob Has a Podcast patrons group right now.
Yes,
so you
so
may be
streaming.
Watching this live.
Yes.
First live Wiggle Room, which is exciting.
A little shout out to the patrons.
Yes. Sorry. What up, patrons?
So that's what we're doing. And then after dinner, we're going to watch some Walking Dead and do that live. So a jam-packed afternoon with Josh
yeah.
here on the West Coast.
Yeah.
Josh, I heard it was an eventful trip for you to get here to this point.
Yeah. Can you believe that I've missed two flights this year?
Wow.
You know, it was bad enough when you and I went.
Apparently.
Apparently. Yeah, it was bad enough when you and I missed our flight together to Reno, but I missed my flight out to Los Angeles.
That's out there now. That's out there.
Yesterday morning. That is out there. That news is out there.
In fairness, it was out there the day it happened when we missed our flight to Reno. Just not, yeah. it had not gotten to my wife
hadn't
until
gotten
recently.
To the right. top of the tree.
Right.
Yeah, but I thought that I had set an alarm. I had a very early morning flight yesterday that was going to get me out to LA in time to like have a driving adventure with my friend from high school who just moved back into town. I was really looking forward to it. And 7 a.m. rolls around and my wife wakes up and says, hey, what time is it? And I look and it's daylight outside and I know that I've missed my flight.
Yeah.
So very, very unfortunate.
You just did one alarm?
I did one alarm and I normally do two. This is why you do two alarms. I did the one. I slept through it. It was very bad. Yes, Emily does know about this. This is not a secret from my wife. She was the one who woke me up And then we proceeded to spend the next few hours together watching the HBO series Divorce.
Whoa.
So, it's a good show. It's
Which
actually really
is
good.
So similar to my story about me missing my flight. And then ultimately, when my wife found out about it, the same sort of ideas were kicked around. Yeah.
Yeah. There was no show involved.
Yes.
We're not watching HBO.
Yes. For those of you not familiar with that soap opera, that my wife, every flight she makes us get to the airport so early, and she has been telling me for years, you're going to miss the flight. Eventually, you're going to miss the flight. I said, no, I never missed the flight. And so when Josh and I missed the flight to Reno earlier this year, I did not tell her for a long time.
Yeah. You held on to the secret.
But I did tell the story.
That secret was as close
publicly.
to the vest as your barbecue joint.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay, so
this barbecue and A has officially opened for business to talk about the Survivor finale that is impending and the Survivor episode that has just passed.
Yeah, so you and I have a busy week. We are both going to be in attendance Wednesday night, shades of 1 year ago when we sat in the audience at the Cambodia finale.
Do you think we'll be seated next to each other again this time?
I hope so.
I hope so.
Yeah, did we request that last time?
I don't know if we requested that last time. Well, you and I were co-hosting a podcast from the red carpet, so it was assumed that we were in cahoots together, so we would probably be sitting in cahoots together.
Yes.
But I don't know about this time. We'll have to see.
I mean, let's be real. You'll probably have much better seats than
Why?
I will.
Yes. Why is that? Well, I am getting the wiggle room plugs on the show, so it does feel like my stock is pretty good right now. I know there are people who think that it's like a thumbs down, that there's no wiggle room, but it's on the show.
Yeah, so that's very fun, and hopefully that we are in a place where not so close to the action where somebody can yell at us for talking throughout the whole show.
Yeah, no, that's not going to happen. Yeah. You know, we take it very seriously. We shut down. We just watch. We're good.
It was fun last season or last year when we were sitting basically next to Andrew Savage's wife, Stephanie Savage.
Yeah, we were.
And Dara.
We were between the Savage family and Cass's family.
Yeah.
It was a really awkward thing where we like had to pick a side. I think that like you were mostly, you know, fraternizing with the Savages.
Yes. So yeah, I get along with everybody. All these family members there at the show.
Do you get
show.
Along with everybody?
I hope so.
Everyone?
All
people?
I hope so.
Okay.
We'll see. Anyway, so Josh, here we are after two boots from this past week. Mm. Sunday and Will end up going home. Did you learn anything interesting in your conversations with them for Parade.com?
Yeah, so I interviewed both Will and Sunday this past week. I got to be honest, like I was a little nervous to talk to Will, having just like shit talked him fairly hard in our wiggle room the other week and comparing him to Joffrey. But
yeah,
he's got a good sense of humor. You know, I think he said it with you on your podcast about like, you know, it's par for the course. People make fun of you. You're on Survivor. I'm a Survivor fan. I understand how this works. For an 18-year-old, that's a really healthy attitude. And I think that was present on the show, too, like in the way that he went out after what I perceived to be, you know, a little bit of a Joffreying, you know, a little bit of a Varuk assaulting of just like a don't care how want it now in the Zeke episode, for him to then, you know, be the very next person voted out, to do it with a smile on his face, to, you know, feel like, you know, this sense of like kind of like. He talked about how like his Survivor life was like flashing before his eyes, which is why he was smiling that way. Like I can relate to what, you know, like I can understand like what that might feel like. Like I think that like the hope is like if any like fan of Survivor were ever to get on the show, like you would hope that you would relish the vote out experience as well. Like you're not rooting for that to happen to you.
Yeah.
But if it does happen, then Jeff Probst is snuffing your torch. And that's super cool. You know, the Cochrane line from South Pacific. So I think for Will to have that is really great. So talking through, you know, everything with him was fun because he's just, you know, he's a good kid, level-headed kid, had a good attitude about it. And Sunday, I think, was rightly disappointed that she was barely on the show.
Mm-hmm.
I would be disappointed about that as well.
I never like to bring that up. I never like to like mention that, open that door.
Yeah, you know, it's unfortunate, but you know, she talked about it a little bit, so I felt like okay, well, we can follow through that door if you've opened it up. So she was disappointed about that, but
what would she say?
What are you gonna do? She just said like, you know, there was stuff that, you know, she talked about. I should have dug in a little deeper to take Jeff's advice and asked about this, but she said there was like a story of her overcoming stuff, but it clearly didn't matter to the main narrative because she goes out when she goes out and isn't, you know, a huge influential instrumental player in clearly what the end game is about to be. So I think like you can understand why that kind of stuff would get cut. But I think that she was just disappointed that it got cut.
Yeah, I know. Well, we could do a whole different conversation about that.
Doesn't like the goat word either, Rob. She's out on the goat, doesn't like the term goat, did not feel that she was a goat, and just wants to get rid of goat from the Survivor vernacular.
Yes.
Yeah.
Gone.
Gone.
We can't even talk about goat in terms of other people?
We could talk about, I guess we could, I don't know. I think at least for this season, I think that she felt that everybody is doing something. Like everybody is playing, you might not be seeing it all, none of us are goats.
Well, everybody's doing something.
Yeah, everyone's breathing.
Yeah, everybody's thinking they're alive, right?
Thinking they're humans. Yeah, they're sleeping
I'm
sometimes.
I'm alive, I'm thinking.
Yes. Fenner, oh my God.
Yes.
I didn't realize that he was in the studio as well.
Yes, I can conjure him.
Yeah, you know, you went out and visited Penner this past week, and a little bit of Penner came back with you.
Yes, yeah. Yes.
An echo of Penner.
Well, it is very fun to walk around and say, the bye-bye man.
The bye-bye man.
Yes, oh that is God. A great Penner title for that movie.
I liked when you asked Penner what the bye-bye man means. He's like, it's just the bye-bye man. It's like the boogeyman. Why do I have to explain it?
Yeah.
So there's going to be no origin of the name, the
well,
bye-bye man.
Well, maybe he doesn't want to give it away.
Oh, so you think it's like a plot twist.
Right. You can find out what it is, but you got to pay your, you know, $12.95.
Interesting. It turns out that, I don't know, I was going to say something stupid. The bye-bye, I don't know. Yeah. Bye-bye baby.
Bye-bye baby.
The man is actually a child this whole time. That's the twist.
Yeah.
He's an infant. It's Anthony.
Please.
Anthony's the bye-bye baby.
Don't keep me up all night. Anthony already does that. Anyway, so Josh, here we are, and we are getting ready now for the finale. Now, I know every season for, what is this, like five seasons in a row? I know your tradition is you rewatch the season going into the finale. Have you completed that rewatch yet?
I have not completed the rewatch. I have initiated the rewatch, and I'm close to being done with the rewatch. But yeah, every time I come out here for the finales, which I've been doing since Cagayan, I will rewatch the season on my flight out. It makes the flight fly by, Rob. It
goes literally
flying by. It goes really, really quick. And I rewatch the season to see if like any sort of clarity is coming together of like, who's going to win this thing? Like, whose story is this? And that's always a fun exercise. So I'm through the Taylor Boot episode right now. That's as far as I am on the rewatch.
Okay. So you got into live know-it-alls.
I feel like I got a hot take or two. First off, Nick Yadanza was totally right. There's a great Taylor line in the first episode when he's...
For those people who might not have listened to the podcast I did with Nick Yadanza, who was
from
Australian
Survivor.
Let's just
call it what it actually is. Yadanza. He doesn't want us to say it, but if that's how it's actually pronounced, I'm committed to getting it right.
Yadanza.
Yadanza.
Okay. It's
my Danza and yours.
So, Nick, in case people were not into the Australian Survivor, didn't want to listen to the podcast with him, could you give the details of the thing? We are citing our source here.
Right.
Nick, first person to come up with this gem from early on in the season.
Yes, the Wiggle Room's favorite Survivor, Nick Iadanza from Australian Survivor, was on a podcast with you talking about having rewatched the season. And there is an early scene of Taylor talking about how he doesn't understand the phrase sleeping like a baby because the babies he knows all sleep terribly. And that is funny in retrospect because he is about to become a father to a baby. To the bye-bye baby of his own. Yeah, baby.
Taylor, you know nothing.
Yeah,
bye-bye
baby. Yeah. So that was really good. That was my first big guffaw of the rewatch. That is pretty good. But no, there's other takes along the way. We could talk about the
what
benefits.
Was the problem? The millennials couldn't sleep?
I guess. I mean, it's actually pretty easy to forget at this point because there's just been such ridiculous gameplay, especially in the post-merge. But remember when all the survivors got evacuated because of a cyclone? Remember how that happened?
Yes.
That was very difficult. That was uncomfortable. I don't think people were really sleeping through that very much.
Was the cyclone foreshadowing in any way for how the rest of the season was going to play out?
Ooh, so there was just like a gameplay tornado coming through Fiji and everyone was going to get swept up and it was just going to be pure chaos. I like that. Let's just say yes.
Sure.
It's probably not intentional. I know that the survivor gods are...
Is there a metaphor to be had there?
Yeah. No, I think that we just hit it. Like, I think that, you know, there is this thing that's just going to go in and wreck your game and it's going to be out of your control. And I think that we have seen that happen for a lot of people this season. You know, people who stepped into, you know, who flew over to Fiji to play some survivor thinking things were going to go their way with no way of seeing the storm that was coming for them. You know, so many people have fallen by the wayside. So that's the metaphor, Rob.
Yeah.
Very, very vivid, colorful, wonderful.
Who was going to be able to ride out the storm?
That's the question.
Or the Sydney.
That's where the city. That's listen. Let's keep this PG. PG law. I think that that's, you know, that's there's definitely lots of questions to be had in that regard as we're moving here to the final six with a really great final six. I know that you've talked about this on the podcast this week of, you know, can you remember a like a better final six than this? I'm sure it exists. I mean, the Kagyan final six is great. There's lots of great final sixes, but this is a very good final six is the point.
Yeah, Kagyan is a great final six. Cambodia, really strong final six. Yeah. I mean, I guess the Kagyan one, it really comes down to what is your, you know, love of Trish
Trish Hegarty.
Hegarty.
I love Trish.
I'm like dyslexic, Garrity.
Yes, yes.
Like Brooke Garrity, yeah. I can't remember.
Or Garrity Adelstein.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think that that's probably in the mix. And, of course, Cambodia. Any other ones really come to mind?
A really good final six. I mean, this is where we get into trouble. I mean, that Heroes Villains final six
so
is great.
It's so top-heavy, this final six.
There's a lot of possible ways for this to go. That's what's really exciting, especially after Ko Rong, where, you know, there was one contingent that was really screaming, Michelle, Michelle, Michelle. And then the people who were watching the show and seeing the gameplay and saying, Aubrey, 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 there's no way. But it was really, you know, those two plus Sydney, you know, were really the people you were looking at. You were counting out Ty at this point. Jason, there was going to be no chance. Jodo Campo, we had no idea that he was going to get skewered out of the game. But, you know, no one really thought that he had a shot to win. I think right now there are four very serious contenders, and I think that you can even make an argument for the other two. So I think that everyone at the very least has very established personality on the show, a pretty clearly established story on the show as well, gameplay moves that they can own. And I think four people in particular have real narrative on their side that you could see how those stories could end in the win. I think maybe one more than the others, but I think even of those four, like you could really see an argument for any one of them.
Why? What's the one?
I don't know. I feel like when you go back and you watch it, and especially in the early going of the season, and it's kind of just by virtue of the fact that they're the tribe that's going to tribal council, you know, three out of those first four pre-swap votes. You know, the story is a lot about David. The story is a lot about David, you know, falling into this, you know, this web of anxiety and, you know, the horror of living out there. I still remember talking about the nightbirds, Rob, you know, like that kind of stuff, just like the things that were scaring him out there, how he's almost the first person voted out. It's, you know, very, very good for him that, you know, that it goes to Rachel, that she screws up the puzzle. So it goes her way. But David's story is really front and center in those first episodes. And I think, given the way it's been framed gameplay wise throughout the season, that David is really being billed as like the general and everything like that, not the Robert De Canio.
Yeah.
Although that would be a great buddy cop, you know, duo. For me, it's feeling like David, but I can see arguments for honestly everybody else and, you know, a few of them more than the others. But David is in the rewatch and in the early going, watching it as David's story of the win. That's what I'm seeing the most right now.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you brought up David because I think that he's probably the most interesting to talk about in terms of the story and the arc of a character in a specific season that I want to give at least some credit, cite another source to Jordan Parhar and the live feed correspondents. They did a podcast this morning. I was in the chat and Brian Gold mentioned about how the arc of David is similar to a Kathy Vavrick O'Brien.
Oh, interesting.
And I think that there is something there, especially a Holly Hoffman type arc, where here's this person and, you know, a Suri 1.0, certainly.
Sure.
Of here's this person.
Fallen Angel.
Oh, well, not necessarily the Fallen Angel.
With a shade of growth narrative.
But no, I'm more talking about specifically the growth of here's this person who gets dropped off, who is really not handling things well.
Yeah.
Even Aubrey last season that you could make the case as well, that here's somebody who is just not handling this, not fitting in. They are in over their heads.
Yeah.
And then by the end of the season, they are, you know, just wheeling and dealing with the best of them. Like they have, like, over the course of 39 days or slightly less for the people that don't make it to the end.
Right.
That, you know, they have sort of like taken to this like a fish in water where they're very much a fish out of water at the start of the
fish
season.
Fish back out of water.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And those stories typically don't end in a victory. So that's something to, that's something to think about.
Cochran is the person that he, you know, gets compared to, but Cochran's arc really happens over two seasons.
Exactly.
You know, Cochran starts in the same place as David on day one, but David is attempting to do in 39 days what it takes Cochran two whole seasons to do.
Well, one thing, there's a scene early on in, I think it's in the first episode. It's one of those David, it's one of those first two episodes, and it's David talking about how he's, you know, uncomfortable around camp and isn't great at the survival aspect of everything. And you see him with a branch, and we, like, you know, the association of, like, the survivor nerd with the branch on the beach right now.
Why'd you say nerd?
You know, like the survivor fan, you know, like the person who's like a really deep cut, you know, like heady, wanting to be, you know, like a really strategic player type of character who's maybe
a wizard.
Who's out of their element, a wizard, if you will, indeed. But, you know, usually that's like, that's the gag, is like they can't break the branch, or at least in the case of Steven, that was the gag. It's like he can't do it while all these big burly men are, you know, knocking down trees. But David breaks the branch. You know, he's working on the branch. It's like this big, you know, this big like dinosaur wishbone. Like it's this gigantic, you know, like branch. It's got like the, you know, the Y shape, and he's twirling it for a while, and it takes a while. And he's talking about how, you know, he's uncomfortable out here, and then it breaks. And I thought that that was interesting. And I have been thinking about like the growth narrative with David, and certainly like thinking back on like our evolution of strategy sessions, and like thinking about when does the growth narrative actually pay off, like. Very rarely, it feels like, but I don't know. I feel like David could be an exception. I feel like David could be, you know, one of the modern examples of that sort of journey actually resulting in a win. I thought that that was an interesting, you know, sort of like visual cue that was on the show.
What about in terms of David's game? That what do you feel like? I know you haven't gotten to the post-merge stuff yet, but I'm really interested to know, obviously, you know, there is the vote where Zeke goes home, but how much credit do you give David for everything that's happened in the post-merge?
I don't know. I think that there's a lot of people out there that are playing pretty hard. And I think to like source it to one person is probably not right. I think what David has done very effectively is he has built this, you know, this voting block of himself and Ken and Adam and Hannah, and he seems to be the person that they are coming to the most. I think that the fact that Hannah jumps ship on Zeke for David when there's no numerical reason to do so, you know, I think that that's a testament to that guy's charisma. You know, he does seem kind of surprisingly, based on who he was at the start of the game, he seems like a very charismatic, really affable guy that people really kind of gravitate toward. I actually think probably, you know, we think about David right now as a really brainy, smart, strategic player, and has been playing, you know, aggressively in that regard, and sometimes is terrible, like, you know, some of those early moves. But I think maybe unreported or underreported might be David's social game, that I think that he might be a pretty lethal social player where it seems like everybody out there really, really likes him. And as you and I have talked about so many times about how much more important that ultimately is to everything else. So I think that that goes a long way for him. I think that's something that I'm appreciating a little bit more on the rewatch.
Okay. What about Ken? You haven't talked much about him.
Yeah.
Did you see anything when you went back? Because Ken, I think that probably the best Ken stuff is the early stuff, the stuff that you have seen on the rewatch.
Yeah, like him hunting, you know, going out fishing and spearing things and being like, David, we're brothers. You know, like everything like that. Like it is a really good look for Ken. I think the thing that holds me back from Ken, like Ken is of the six people that are there, I think that Ken is probably fourth in my power rankings of who's going to win this thing. And I think it's because he's certainly, you know, has had a really great positive portrayal in the early going. It's been rougher recently, but he was very, very present. He was very well loved in the early going of the season. But the thing that's holding it back for me, it's kind of meta, is like in exit interviews and stuff, it doesn't feel like people love Ken. You know, like it doesn't, like I'm not getting the sense that there's a ton of love for Ken. And I don't know what permutation of people he could go up against of this final six where he is the one who played the best and is the most liked. So I'm not super convinced of his odds, even though he looked really good. I mean, he's always looked great. Even though he, you know, his chances looked really good early on. And I know that Colin Stone is still banging the Ken drum. Which, you know, again, just hold myself back a little bit here. But I respectfully disagree. I don't think much of his shot, but he has been present enough on the show that it's not out of the realm of possibility, but not wildly impressed, Rob.
You mentioned that you had a top four that Ken was, I'm assuming you have top six,
yeah.
But that you mentioned Ken is number four. Who's your 1, 2, 3?
I think it would right now it would go David, Adam, Jay, Ken, Hannah, Brett.
Yes.
Is probably what I'm looking at.
Yeah. Is there a big moat between any of those numbers in the power rankings?
Yeah, I think that with respect to Brett and Hannah, I don't feel I think that Penner summed up the Brett situation quite eloquently in your podcast with him, that Brett's path to the victory is a nuclear bomb goes off, Brett's the last man standing, and he gets to win.
Well, I believe he said an atom bomb. Sure if he was talking about
an Adam Klein bomb.
Yes, like the Garbage Pail Kid,
yeah.
The atom bomb, one of the most famous Garbage Pail Kids around. I wasn't sure.
That's pretty good.
Yeah. If that's what he was thinking.
Yeah. No, and listen, I went on like
if an Adam Klein bomb goes off.
Yeah. I went on a Brett rant a few weeks ago where it's like, wouldn't it be incredible of Survivor to have a character who's kind of, you know, underportrayed in the early going, and you're spending more time focusing on all of these different contestants who are really big, vivid characters, and you're fleshing that out. And then you wait until the merge, once all of those people are really set up and really established, to start really fleshing out your winner. Like, I feel like that would be a really interesting way of telling the story of a Survivor season. And that really, you know, those wheels started turning with me right around the time that Brett and Zeke had the conversation about Brett being gay. And that's such a good emotional character moment. But that being said, since then, like, I just feel like I don't know that Brett has a great path to the end. I don't know that he's, you know, I don't know that he's an aggressive enough player to get there right now. He feels like a very easy, like fifth, you know, place finisher to me. And I think just going back and looking at how vividly some of these other people are portrayed, it just feels like I don't think that Brett's got the shot. I would love to see it, 'cause I love Brett. I think that he's great, and that would be a really compelling thing. Like, I think going into this finale with so many different possibilities of who could win, where you could make an argument for pretty much anyone, at least to some extent. I think that that's already great that we're, you know, confused enough that there isn't like a consensus winner pick right now.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think that Brett winning is going to be like the exclamation mark on that argument. I don't see it, but I'd be very happy if that were the outcome.
I do think that he has a great chance to be the absolute standout of Final Six press interviews.
I'm really, really looking forward to talking to Brett.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm real. Like, he's a funny guy. You got to imagine he's going to have really funny stories and commentary of like the nonsense that went on his tribe. I actually really want to kind of pick his brain about the Ikabula days.
Mm-hmm.
It's a fun tribe. That was a fun mix of people. And a lot of them, you know, pretty much until Sunday goes, that whole tribe minus Michaela in the pre-merge, that whole tribe is still hanging in there up until this past episode, until Will and Sunday Go, rather. So I'd love to hear if there's any weird shenanigan stories. Also, I just wonder if he's already going to be drunk. Or if that's going to happen later. Like, should we bring beer like to the red carpet? Or is that a no-no?
No, don't bring beer to the finale. To the finale. I don't think they serve alcohol, but I do feel like sometimes it does seem like the survivors like somehow smuggle in their own.
I feel like we've seen that before. Like in like going back and consulting the finales, perhaps someone named Rob was very drunk.
Well, that's
once. And
different
not this
story.
Rob, and not this Rob.
Yeah,
not
that's
this
a
Rob.
Different story. You know, the Central Park finale. Yeah. So yeah, it does feel like that sometimes that these survivors, I don't know if we need to like check them for contraband on the way in, but I do feel like sometimes like they might like smuggle something in from the hotel.
Right, right. So I'll be curious to see what shape Brett is in when we get to him.
Doesn't happen often.
No.
Maybe, and not for a while. Maybe they locked that down.
Yeah, it's been a minute.
All right. So in your top four, we've touched on David. We've touched on Ken.
Yeah. Would you rather go there? Should I just say a quick Hannah piece? Because I don't think that Hannah's going to win.
If you have a Hannah piece, we could say it.
Yeah, I don't think that Hannah is going to win. And maybe I would switch the order of Hannah and Brett for like similar reasons as to the Ken thing, where like I'm not getting the sense that her gameplay is super respected among her peers. I think that Zeke said something really interesting to me in our exit interview when he was describing Hannah's play. I think that he said this in a bunch of his exit interviews. Hannah has great ideas about mm-hmm. how to play Survivor, but the implementation is lacking. Like, the execution is lacking. We've seen that up and down throughout the season. It's such a funny moment, the Mari vote, when she's, you know, just chilling there for like 20 minutes, you know, and Jeff has to check in. And that's still such a great moment. And I love that Hannah has been a presence in this TV Guide character rankings.
Yes, Josh, I know you've watched so much TV this year. That is your job, that you are a professional TV watcher.
That's correct.
Of course, that I know from our many conversations. You've said that of the many characters, the hundreds of characters you've seen on TV, Hannah, top 14.
I love that. You know what I love the most?
Top Survivor character of the year. Nobody else, not even one other Survivor character.
No
even
tie.
Cracks the no.
No. No tie. No
does
ties.
Does not even crack the top 20.
Well, look.
Only Hannah, number 14.
All right. So she's.
Watch out, Maeve. She's coming for you.
she's the Tandy Newton of Survivor. Yeah, she's repping the Survivor characters here in 2016 in this TV Guide.
Look out, Marcia Clark.
This TV Guide poll. And I think that she's, you know, is she the best Survivor character of the year?
Yes.
According to TV Guide, sure. She's really good. She is really good. You can quibble with, is she the representative or not? She's great. She's very, very fun. I love her success on
that.
I love her success on that because I think that's
the best.
It speaks to the Survivor fans who are rallying behind the cause of a Survivor character being here and trying to push that agenda. So I love that. She is really, really funny. She's a great quote machine. The whole use me, everything like that is super,
use
super
me.
Good. And she clearly knows the game really, really well. But I do think it's that execution. And I don't think that that's playing out well for her. And I think it doesn't help. This isn't from the rewatch, but it's from this past episode. So it's, you know, fresh in mind is her whole argument about, you know, having that be vocalized on the show, like the enticing goat of it all. I do think that that's Hannah's fate ultimately.
I thought we're not supposed to say the G word anymore.
The enticing G. She's the enticing G word.
That's enticing with two G's.
Yes, enticing. Enticing goat should be a new Tyson Apostle Twitter account.
Yes. Let's touch on Jay and Adam. Do you have an order of preference?
So I think Adam has the better shot. And I think so here's the thing. Let's go with Jay because I love Jay. Jay is probably my favorite character of Survivor Millennials versus Gen X, ultimately. Shouldn't come as a surprise. I think I've been pretty high on Jay here. Actually, I will dig this up. Your buddy and mine, the great Antonio Mazzaro, had texted me earlier today and wanted to express a take on Jay. This is from Antonio. If you haven't recorded The Wiggle Room yet, we're recording it right now. Would love to hear you talk about Jay's arc, especially how his story and game look different right now if he hadn't moved against Michaela. He has a fully three-dimensional story right now, and I love it. He was in the shitheel alliance with the showmans. He cut an entertaining ally a lot earlier than people thought he should have and was cold-blooded when he did it. Then he boldly didn't play his idol more than once, but then got worried and did so incorrectly. He's fought with Adam, but also loves him. Hashtag yin-yang. Love Jay, and I wonder if the narrative on that Michaela move has changed in results-oriented hindsight. Well, we're not talking about results-oriented hindsight. I think if we were talking about results-oriented hindsight, it wasn't great. I mean, Jay's hanging on by a thread.
It looks worse now.
Yeah, I think it looks worse.
Yeah.
But as a character, Jay is fascinating to me. Starts off as one of the bros, you know, one of the Triforce bros.
Mm-hmm.
I think it took until about episode 2 for you and I to agree that Jay was the Triforce of wisdom in this threesome, in this three-pronged Triforce alliance. So even from that early on, we knew that of these three, of Taylor, Figgy, and Jay has the most gameplay potential. I think that that's bared out. I think that he has been, overly aggressive at times with that Michaela vote, which was still such a great tribal council, but a questionable move. And he has been in danger all the way through. He has boldly sat on an idol that has been gangster and awesome to watch. His scene with Adam in this past episode, like you were gushing about on Know It Alls, like you're not going to get a more authentic moment on TV than something like Jay pulling down the buff, you know, when he's crying because he's hearing Adam's story and he's really connecting with that, and him thinking that Adam's not a weasel anymore and that he, you know, he's not going to tell anybody about Adam's secret. Even if, you know, potentially, I mean, it's a morally questionable thing to do, but, you know, there are people who would think that through on a gameplay level and be like, if that guy gets to the end, he's going to get the Jeremy Collins treatment. And Jay is still going to sit on that. So I love Jay as a human and as a character. I think he's a flawed player. But I think that he's probably the best liked of everybody still remaining. Like, if you think about what the jury is shaping up as,
he's got an amazing jury lineup.
You know, he's got a, and that's why everyone, it's in their best interests. I mean, people have been making moves that are not in their best interests sometimes this season, so hard to say that, but I think it's got to be so obvious that if you let Jay get to the end, that dude wins. He wins against anybody, I think.
I agree.
I think that he goes in there and it's lights out. It's hard to imagine a scenario that he doesn't win of the current people left in the game. I think his path to get there is close to impossible. Hasn't been, you know, it's been done before.
See, I don't think it's that dire. I mean, it's basically, it's three challenges.
It's three challenges.
And his biggest competition is Ken. And outside of that, I mean,
David has won an immunity, and it wasn't a mental immunity. It wasn't like it wasn't a puzzle, Rob. It was
Jay won the puzzle.
Yeah, it was a physical endurance challenge, and David won. Mm-hmm. I think that we've seen improbable immunity wins in the past, and certainly on this season in the form of David. So I wouldn't say like it's you know, he's got no competition that he's going up against. I think that the challenges are designed right now to break any number of ways.
Yeah.
But I mean, Ken is his direct physical competition. And as you pointed out, Jay is also good at puzzles. So it's not impossible that he could win the three. There have been harder paths to the end that have been done most recently with Mike.
There's also a possibility that he might not have to win an immunity at a certain point. Like,
yeah.
It's not necessarily like every single person needs to have him go home. Like, he could, you know, he has some ins with Brett, potentially with Adam.
Yeah, no, there's, you can get creative with it. And this has been a creative season. So if you're like, you're really thinking outside
the box. Like, for instance, hypothetically, let's say he wins immunity at six, okay?
Yeah.
And he gets past that final six vote. And we don't do too much strategy here.
Sure, sure, sure.
But if he gets past that six vote, all of a sudden, landscape's a little different at five, where potentially Adam and Brett could go with him instead of whoever's left from. And Ken, I'm assuming with the legacy advantage, would still be there.
Right.
But let's say they get out David at six.
Yeah.
That potentially that he might have some moves to make.
Some wiggle room, Rob.
Yeah.
Might have some wiggle room. I don't think that that's impossible. I think that it's a lot of things got to go really right for Jay.
Right.
And, you know, the game is in a position where you have to work with who you're able to work with right now. And if that is Jay, if like you need Jay to make a move, then of course go for it. But I don't know. It's just Jay's threat level of being in that final three and letting him inch closer to it at this stage of the game, if he's unimmune, would be a really bad call from where I'm sitting. So as much as I would love to see it, there's probably no one I would want to win more than Jay, just because I've enjoyed him so much this season. I think it's hard for me to wrap my head around, you know, like what that would look like to get him there. But that would mean we'd be in for a hell of a finale.
Who is the former Survivor player that you think is the best comparison for Jay at this point?
Oh my God, who's the best comparison for Jay at this point? I mean, like, I don't know. I'll describe the things about Jay, and you tell me if somebody comes to mind. You know, he's kind of got like the Golden Boy thing going on, where he's got like the Joey Amazing Malcolm aesthetic to him. Is just
Blake from Guatemala.
Yeah, he's a successful Blake.
No.
A Blake success story. I don't know. I'm blanking on who's a really good match for that. But I just think Jay gets there and he wins.
Yeah. So he's somewhere in between a Malcolm and Fabio. Is that it?
Maybe.
I feel like that's an interesting comparison.
Yeah.
Where he also has the underdog thing working for him, so he's a bit of a favorite. But he's like willing to make the big move,
right?
Like we saw with the Michaela. Like Fabio was not going to pull off a big move like that, obviously, in Nicaragua.
Right.
So maybe that's part of the Malcolm thing, where he does have like that showmanship.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I don't know if we have anybody who's quite like him. Like, he is a bro, but he does not like put off a negative vibe in any way that people are turned off by his
bro-iness. I'm sure there are.
To a degree.
But for you and I, he is our bro. Like, this is a bro that we are responding to right now.
Right.
Yeah.
He certainly had the moment where he could have taken the heel turn when he voted out Michaela.
Right.
and I think that that was come back around on that.
And I think it was a good observation of like if things do break his way after that, like you could see the scenario. I think you and Steven talked about this of like Jay on a future season could be a villain. Like you could, you could really easily see like people rooting against Jay. But I think, you know, it has it's one of those things where like when people are put in into the corner and they are able to like still be alive in this game from that position, you tend to root for that underdog. And Jay has found himself in that position. So it'd be exciting. It'd be really exciting to see him pull it off.
Okay, what about Adam on the rewatch? First five episodes, you said you got through his big moment in the early going where he ultimately gets rid of Figgy.
Right. Yeah, well, so with Adam, I was really looking because Adam has been, I mean, Adam's the main character right now, as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. I mean, his whole journey with his mom, you know, and her being sick, and how emotional that's been, and that incredible episode that he had with the family reward, with the family visit, you know, emotionally incredible. He slam dunks with the idol, even if that's, you know, not necessarily was the greatest thing to do. But it's such a good episode for him. And I think that we've seen him, even if things didn't break his way with his wanting to, you know, flesh out Jay's idol and bounce the votes back on David, even though that didn't break his way. I think that we've seen him in such a central place recently that he, to me, is the guy right now. So in the rewatch, I was really going back to see, like, how present is he early on and what kind of material is happening with Adam in the early going? Like, what's his story early on? And it's not until he finds the idol, and I think that's episode 4, where you really start getting the emotional aspect of Adam. But he's very present in the beginning. You know, he's one of the millennial narrators for sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I think Adam is one of those people where, like, again, I feel like, I don't know, it's been up and down with him. Because we got to the merge and, you know, his two closest allies are describing him as a shitty ally. How is that guy going to win the game?
Mm-hmm.
But I think that he's there's so much poured into him on an emotional level.
But Hannah actually does a 360 on him.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like they end up working together again. And he resolves a lot of those situations. You know, his number one enemy in the game, he has converted that guy.
Right.
You know, Jay.
Where Hannah at the merge is talking with Zeke about like, oh, this is terrible. Right. Adam is the worst. And then she's back with Adam talking about like, you know, mobster Zeke.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So I think that, you know, Adam's situation turned around. Adam's emotional arc is so strong that like you could really see the situation where he, you know, he goes to final tribal council against anyone and busts out that speech. And even if he's against Jay, maybe draws some votes. So I feel like, you know, if he's there and he delivers a Jeremy Collins type of speech, feel really good about Adam's shot. But I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like if he's there, if he's in the final three, I feel like going into that final tribal council, I guess it depends on who he's up against, but I'd feel pretty good about Adam being able to eke it out.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. I'm with you on all of that. What's the story of the legacy advantage?
The story of the legacy advantage is about to, you know, make itself known. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a great part of the premiere. It's an exciting concept. This isn't going to, you know, this bomb isn't going to go off until the finale.
Mm.
And it's looming and it only passed hands once. So that's maybe a little bit disappointing. But I don't know. I mean, it really.
Let me ask the question this way.
Yeah.
Okay. So do you feel like the story of the legacy advantage is going to be one where, wow, we underestimated the importance of the legacy idol or we overestimated the importance of the legacy advantage? It ultimately isn't going to change the ultimate winner and how things ultimately go.
I mean, here's what it means.
And I don't necessarily mean that Ken wins because of it, but it ends up ultimately that it's a different game. The winner ends up being different because of that legacy advantage being in play.
Yeah, you got to wonder.
Six.
You got to wonder about that. What I do think is like, no matter what it is, it suggests to me that Ken advances to final five.
Yeah.
So like on the low end of things that it could possibly be, could be an immunity challenge advantage. And those in these spots, like very, very rarely, it's hard for me. I know there's an instance, but it's hard to imagine the instances where that doesn't result in a win. Like if it's like,
well,
an extra knot. Yeah. Like the Malcolm thing.
Yeah. Final four in Philippines, he wins a reward advantage. He gets a second life in a game
right.
that he wasn't able to do anything. He's not even like one of the last two people left in the challenge.
Right. I'm guessing that this is probably going to be, if it's that, then like it's going to be something that's going to push Ken through. And
is that what you think it's going to be? Because I've said that I think that it will be some sort of just advantage in the final six. I think that the purpose of the legacy advantage was just to try to make it, you know, life difficult for the person who has the legacy advantage, as opposed to the legacy advantage being this, ultimate power in the game that we say, wow, it really just came down to who had the legacy advantage.
Well, I think that that's going to be a really interesting thing to determine once we know what it is, because once we know what it is, then you have to consider its existence in the future. Like going forward, you have to consider the existence of a legacy advantage, that might be somewhere that's out there in the game. And if it's just like a hokey dokey immunity challenge advantage, or like here's a cot, you want a mattress for a night, if it's something like that, then maybe you're not so worried about it. But if it ends up being something really powerful that ends up impacting or transforming the game from the final six moving forward, that's going to be something that's really scary in the future. I don't think that it's going to be that, but I guess it could be. I mean, it could be a bomb.
An atom bomb?
It could be an Adam Klein bomb. So I don't know. I'm excited about it, though. You know, like, even if it's a dud, I'm excited to just, like, find out what this thing is. Yeah. I wonder, we did a legacy advantage draft. They don't have, I don't remember who has who. Did either of us draft Ken for that?
Of who was going to have it in the end? I don't think so. I don't think so. Do you think if Penner played again when he votes somebody out, that when he's voting them out, he'd say, bye bye, man?
Yeah. Yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
I'm the bye bye man. make you go bye bye.
You're going bye bye. You just like play for the hashtag.
Yeah, you're going bye bye, man. I like that. I like that a lot.
So happy to see Penner at this point.
Looking forward to the bye-bye, man, Rob.
Yes. I mean, who isn't?
No, everyone. Everyone's really greatly, greatly looking forward to it.
Okay, Josh. So I feel like the stage is set here for Wednesday night. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about in the final wiggle room before the finale?
No, I mean, we're going to get together. We're going to talk. We're going to talk after the finale. I'm greatly rooting for Paul Blart. You know, I'm on your side for that, with apologies to Jordan. I really would love a Paul Blart action, would be fantastic.
Yeah. Do you want to try to predict what is the craziest thing? Like, what is the Sia? What is the Sia moment that we don't see coming yet?
Oh my God.
We don't see it coming.
I don't know. I don't know that anything could ever top Sia in terms of ridiculousness and me feeling like my life is in imminent danger.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know that I don't know. A drone comes in and finally delivers milk to Paul. Like that happens at the finale. Like that's the Rodney birthday cake.
I mean, every one of these finales has something that we just say, you know, something that makes all of the fans on Twitter go nuts, and something that we're talking about the next day. And obviously Josh and I are going to get together on Thursday and talk this through again and take your voicemails and your feedback. But there's going to be something, there's like some great unknown that we can't even imagine yet. That's going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, they're going to talk to kids, right? Like kids will be addressed because it's the millennials and the stuff. And like, this is the next generation.
Yes, but they'll do that during the show.
Right.
Do you get a sense that they will be coming back live, in and out live? Like that's a thing now.
Yeah, that's what they do. Yeah.
I love it. I think that's great.
Oh, it's fun. And it's really fun to be in the room for that. So I'm really looking forward to it. No, I'm excited to see how this all wraps up. This has been a very fun season of Survivor, I think, especially recently. Some of those early episodes are a little bit of a slog. Some of those first few.
I don't disagree.
Some of those first few votes, especially in retrospect, especially with how good the season has gone, are definitely slower burn. But I do think that things take a turn at the swap. And once you hit the swap, those three episodes are all very good. And then once you hit the merge, it's been gold ever since. So this has been a really great season of Survivor. Yeah. Very excited for how it wraps up.
Specifically, the first episode, I think in hindsight, is so-so. Probably the worst episode of the season is the Paul vote, is the third episode.
Probably true.
Not a lot going on in the fourth episode, but at least David plays the idol and saves Jessica.
I think the argument's between those two.
Yeah.
You know, but I think that the idol play probably catapulted above.
And then I don't think that there's a bad episode the rest of the way.
No, it's been
once you get to episode five.
Really good. Great cast this season. You know, it's been very, very fun characters, people who came out to play hard. The sportsmanship, everyone's a good sportsmanship. Rob has been has been really lovely.
We're very lucky.
You know, that's really nice. It's great. Like, this is, feels like a positive season of Survivor. Mm-hmm. And I appreciate the positivity, especially now more than ever we could use it. So I'm looking forward to it. And I would honestly, I'd be happy pretty much with anybody who wins. You know, there, it would have to be a story for like Brett to win. So that would be awesome. So I'm happy with any outcome right now. Rooting for Jay the hardest.
Okay.
Yes.
What's the hashtag, Josh?
Ooh.
Adam Kleinbaum?
Adam Kleinbaum was good.
Okay.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. That was good.
Very good. Thank you, Penner.
Blow that up.
Thank you, Penner, for that. All right. So here's what's coming up next. We've got the Why Blank Lost with David Bloomberg.
Why Blank and Blank
Why
Lost.
Why Blank and Blank Lost.
Two blanks. Double
blank. We can say Why Will and Sunday Lost.
Yeah, we can say
at this point.
Yes.
And we're an hour into another podcast.
Yes.
Actually, just a little behind the scenes, already recorded that today. So I can spoil that whole podcast for you.
No,
I can
no
tell you
spoilers.
The whole thing.
No spoilers. No spoilers.
You have to wait for it. That's going to be going up Monday night into Tuesday.
Yeah.
And then you guys will hear a News AF.
Ooh, I love the News AF.
Wiggler's a big News AF guy.
Love the News AF. Yeah, I'm a little behind right now,
it's a good one this past week.
Good.
This past week is a good one.
Looking forward to it.
And then here's what's coming up. Then we'll have our know-it-alls with Steven.
Yep.
And then he's going to be live.
Yeah.
And then
who's his co-host? Do you know? Is that something you can announce yet?
I said in the Why Blank Lost podcast that it's 99% confirmed.
Okay.
But I just want to like get that in Stone, not Colin Stone.
Yes.
Just get that, you know, 100% before I turn the key on that.
And you're going to have a special co-host on the carpet as well.
Yeah, I teased it and I didn't announce it and nobody guessed it. So I don't know that I feel like that at this point, I feel like I'm just
keep it.
Keep it under wraps.
Perhaps. I will say, without identifying the person, I'm both really excited and kind of socially anxious and nervous.
Yes, Wiggler's pumped up. So it'll be fun.
It'll be fun. I think it's going to be good.
So that's going to be Wednesday night. Steven will be live, and then we'll be at the finale. I'll be on the red carpet and be having my interviews with everything. We'll have video and audio of those, hopefully up for you guys by Thursday morning.
Nice.
And then Josh and I will get together sometime on Thursday and get into all of your feedback.
Yeah, it'll be good. I'm really looking forward to Thursday's show.
Yeah, it's all happening. So check that out. Of course, Josh and I will also be back together after we have dinner for the live Walking Dead finale of the midseason.
Any predictions? Who's going to win the Walking Dead midseason finale?
I think an Adam Klein bomb is going to go off.
Honestly, I'd be happy with that.
Yes.
And just like decimates every single person on the show. And it's just the end of the Walking Dead forever.
You like the season one finale.
Yeah. It's like a large scale CDC.
Boom.
Yep.
All right. So that's going to do it for us here today. Thank you so much, Josh Wiggler. Always a pleasure to have you here in the studio.
Always a pleasure to be here, Rob. I greatly appreciate you having me.
Yes. That's going to do it for us. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments. Always appreciate you guys. If you're doing any holiday shopping, using our links for Amazon.com.
Yes.
And have a good one, everybody. Take care. Bye.
Bye.